It was the well-known face of Mr. Morrow, whose mortal lineaments had but a few hours before been covered up from sight. The lips moved, and Mr. Akin, whose attention had been directed to the scene by the frightened gestures of his wife, and who had started forward, caught these words: "I come to tell you I am happy, all pain is removed. Tell Kate I am with her mother now, we bring our love, our blessing, we will care for her, we bless you all." In a moment the scene changed, the features of the sleeping girl resumed their natural appearance, but for an instant only. Before any word could be spoken by the astonished spectators, they beheld a sight which electrified their souls, and who as soon as they could comprehend it filled them with the keenest rapture, none other than the well-remembered face of their darling Lucy, whom they had long mourned as lost to them, gazed upon them with an expression of the most angelic love and peace. In a little while the spirit gained power to speak to her parents, assuring them of her presence with them from the day of her physical decease, and of her endeavors to announce herself to them, relating scenes in the spirit world, and speaking of her home of light there. Thus did she continue until the shades of doubt, perplexity, and incredulity faded from the father's face, until the sensation of terror vanished from the mother's heart, when, with a tender caress to both parents, she bade them adieu. You can imagine the rapture and happiness which dawned upon that household at this revelation of life and love from beyond the grave. Words failed to express the joy they felt. It must be experienced to be fully appreciated. In a little time it became almost a daily occurrence for Kate Morrow to be controlled by some dear spirit from whose lips the Akins received many lessons of instruction and benefit. Their darling child was enabled to explain the past, and her efforts to reach them. Not only did this bright spirit, and Mr. and Mrs. Morrow, come with messages of love and advice, but other dear ones also manifested their presence, until it seemed that the gates of heaven were indeed opened and the angels thronging through. No happier home is to be found anywhere than that of the Akins. From the experiences of the past they have learned many lessons. As benefactors to the needy and suffering they are widely known, for they delight to use their wealth for good, under the direction of their angel friends, while Katie Morrow is looked upon by all as the favored daughter of a most happy and lovable couple. Chapter 11. Experiences in Spirit Life. In my investigations into the mode and manner of living beyond Earth's portals, and in my desire to gain knowledge of spiritual things, I have visited many places, witnessed various scenes, some strange, others familiar, and have interviewed a number of spirits in regard to their own experiences. A portion of the information thus acquired I propose to transcribe for my readers. I do not think that mortal, even well-educated, well-informed spiritualists realize fully that all around them spirits live, that the very atmosphere pressing around them is peopled by human, conscious, individualized beings, each intent upon his or her own work, purpose or mission, be it good or be it evil. While this is true, it is also true that the spirit world has its localities, its homes distinct from your homes, its natural scenery, and its places of interest. Its life is as real, and its inhabitants pass through many and varied experiences, even as do the denizens of the mundane sphere, the various classes of spirits near the earth. In passing, let me simply state that those beings who peopled the world around you, who dwell in earthly homes and pursue a labor in connection with material life, are not all attracted to this locality of yours by the same conditions. Some of these spirits are bound to physical life because of the grossness of their undernatures. Their joy is found in pursuing carnal pleasures. They have no desire to rise above the conditions of matter. A portion of the spirits abiding here are held by the selfish affection of their mortal friends who cling to them, if only in memory, with a passionate sorrow and despair that will not let them rise above the earthly sphere, and for a time such spirits remain in contact with material life, because they yet lack the power to rise above its conditions. Others find their work and pass a large part of their existence here, in connection with the physical, in doing good, ministering to the spiritual necessities as well as laboring for the alleviation of the physical wants and sorrows of suffering humanity. And so you have a world within a world right here, and a double life pulsating, where you only perceive the manifestations of the external, and those of you whose aspirations are holy, whose desire is to be of use in the world, who strive to do right, attract the good spirits to your side. They come to gain magnetic strength from your lives, which enables them to resist the friction of material conditions while pursuing their labors for others, and at the same time they impart a blessing of peace to your souls. Often do you entertain unawares pure and silent guests, who watch you with their holy eyes and read your hearts with unerring precision. And those of you whose aims are all personal and selfish, whose motives are impure and unworthy, who do not cultivate charity and kindly feeling toward others, attract undeveloped, unreliable spirits to your homes. They come depleting you of vital and spiritual strength, thus leaving you unarmed for the battles of life, sowing discord in your hearts. Their presence is a curse to all. Where ill harmony, want of sympathy and distrust abound in families, these selfish, malicious spirits delight to throng, and thither they flock, by their presence to increase the unhappiness of the home of strife, while at the same time fostering their own disposition to live a sensuous life. And so it behooves each one of earth to look well to the personal life they live, for upon its character depends not only their own happiness but also the well-being of many others. The power and extent of personal influence. These things of which I speak I have learned through my experiences with spirits, and they have opened up a vast field of inquiry concerning the influence which we as individuals, embodied or disembodied, exert upon one another, a field that has yet to be explored thoroughly by the investigating spirit of man. And when its problems are solved, and its questions correctly answered, I believe we shall understand many mysteries which now puzzle humanity, and comprehend more fully the conditions pressing around and upon mankind. And in this way, and from these experiences, we will learn to so regulate our individual lives that only the best influences will emanate from them, and only the highest results flow from their midst. It has interested me to perceive the lives led by spirits in the body, for when I come in close contact with a mortal, I can behold the interior workings of the spirit within, and know whether its tendency is upward or downward, for life is continuous everywhere, and what its environments and conditions are to the mortal, so are they of the same kind as those to the spirit, a apart from the body, a only differing in degree, those of the untrammeled spirit perhaps being less limited, intolerant, and arbitrary. And so spirits begin their vital experiences in the body and work out through them into the larger freedom, the broader realities and wider expanse, of the immortal world. These truths are suggestive of thought to the studious mind, and teach the lesson that you, mortals, are God's children now, are His spirits of the present as much as you ever will be, and it is your bounden duty to brighten, unfold, and bless your spiritual life in the body as much as it will be to do so by and by, when you leave the tenement of clay for another home not made with hands. Beulah, a spirit missionary, I wish to tell you, my friends, of a dear, beautiful spirit who is a missionary of joy and peace, a true ministering angel to many a sad and weary soul, a one whom I shall call Beulah in speaking of her to you, for she is really a beautiful, blessed being. This spirit lived in the mortal form to an advanced age, but long since passed to the spirit world, after an earthly life of varied experience, a one flecked here and there with sunbeams, but also one that was thickly sown with tears, for trouble, privation, and sorrow were often her portion. To look upon this sainted being now, her whole form illuminated with the interior light of a pure soul, her features, no longer careworn and bearing the impress of weakness and age, but beaming with the bloom of vigor and strength, and showing only the traces of matured experience and thought, radiant with benevolence and kindliness. A with the glance of a casual observer you would have no idea that this woman had suffered as few are called upon to suffer, even in this mundane sphere, and only the watchful, experienced I would detect the signet of firm endurance and quiet patience resting upon that noble countenance, and realize that that signet had been won through sufferance of sorrow, deep and stern. Yet so it was, And it is this calm, sweet, even holy expression, such as you might imagine martyrs wearing, which imparts a loftiness of character to the features of this truly spiritual being. With the early life of Beulah we have nothing to do, it is only of her spiritual experience and work that we wish to speak. When this woman entered the spirit land, laying down the casket of flesh with its weakness and weariness, she did not find herself an exhausted being, one lacking the vital force of activity, the fire of energy or the potency of will, for through all the struggles of her mortal career she never lost faith in the power and the goodness of God to evolve light from darkness, strength from weakness, and knowledge and wisdom from the bitter trials of existence. She never faltered or fell fainting by the way, but rather bravely struggled on in spite of disaster and care. Therefore, hers was a brave, strong spirit, one that gathered power from the storms of adversity, sweetness from affliction, and knowledge from the lessons of life. And when she had thrown off the useless body of clay, she found her inner powers springing up renewed and quickened, and ready to outwork themselves in useful labor for humanity. It was my good fortune to become associated with this dear woman. Indeed, she was one of the first to bring me strength and cheer in my newfound spirit home, for she is one of my kin, and when my heart grew faint within me for the old earthly life with parents and mortal friends, as it sometimes would, it was her words, her tender, brave, hopeful ministrations that revived my drooping spirits, and led me to learn something of the helpful, active, benevolent labor of her life in the spheres. No tale of sorrow is ever poured into her ear without meeting with a responsive flood of sympathy and cheer that lightens the weary soul of its burden forthwith. Let Beulah become aware of any soul in distress, and she is constantly learning of such, and she is ready to seek that suffering one, and by the influence her presence imparts, she succeeds in uplifting, strengthening, and benefiting him or her. Beulah's self-sacrificing beneficence. I have watched carefully the work of this remarkable woman, and have never known her to fail in imparting relief to any suffering one whom she sought to assist. Her indomitable, yet tender, loving spirit seems to know no such word as failure or defeat. She wills to succeed in her work, her whole soul is engaged in it, with her it is truly a labor of love. Her own past experience has surcharged her heart with sympathy and affection for mankind. She despises no one, not even the vilest sinner. She would not hesitate to go down into the depths of the darkest, most offensive conditions to rescue a human being, even though her pure hands and her beautiful garments were grievously besmirched thereby, and she would succeed in her efforts for that human being's redemption, for her unflinching bravery, her untiring patience and unwavering gentleness, would cause her to win the victory over all foes. You can perhaps gain an idea from what I tell you of Beulah of the usefulness, nobility, and grandeur of such lives as hers, and just such lives are attained by all spirits who are firm, enduring, patient, and unselfish. Those who grow strong through suffering, even as the oak tree gains strength and vigor because of the blasts that shake its sturdy frame, those whose spirits are mellowed, sweetened, and ripened, despite the calamities that befall them in their journey through matter, eventually become just such beautiful ministers of love and light, of joy and gladness, as this woman of whom I write today. I have known Beulah to leave her bright, happy home in the supernal realm and immure herself in some dark, unsightly, and miserable place where a human being groveled in the haunts of wickedness, sorrow, or despair, in order to bring the magnetic rays of light from her own pure presence and the soothing, cheering influence of her beautiful sphere, to bear upon that unhappy spirit for its own advancement. And I have known her to absent herself from her nearest friends for months, during which time she was engaged in ministering to the wretched and sad, walking by their side, dwelling in their midst, never withdrawing her helpful influence from them until she had succeeded in elevating their spirits above the gross desires of carnal life, or awakening within them emotions of peace and hope where before only despair and woe had reigned. Oh, this one blessed spirit has accomplished great good in her own humble manner. Because of her ministrations alone, hundreds of souls now blossom out in gladness and beauty, which before were shadowed by desolation and the keenest pain. Reformation of spirits in the lower spheres. It is true that hundreds of evil-minded, ignorant, crude, and unfolded spirits pass out of the body annually, and it is also true that most of these unfortunate ones remain for a long time in the darkened condition which the effects of their earthly career have surrounded them with, but while this is so, it is sweet to know and realize that good and noble souls, enlightened and developed spirits, are making grand and unwearying efforts to elevate, strengthen, and educate those who come to the eternal world bowed down by moral weakness and spiritual infirmity. These endeavors for the sake of others are not without avail, on the contrary they are grandly successful, and while we are constantly receiving new arrivals of such poor unfortunates in the spirit world who are in need of the ministrations of pure and good teachers and helpers, we are as continuously finding other heretofore ill-disposed spirits arousing to the requirements of their being, to the necessity of making an effort to rise above the darkness and slough of evil conditions, and to a desire for a holier and a better life, and I am glad to be able to report to you this grand truth. Daily are the angels of goodness called upon to rejoice over many sinners who, repenting of their wrongdoing, are determined to become worthy members of humanity. Therefore, though largely peopled with undeveloped, unholy human beings, even the lowest spheres of the spiritual world are spheres of advancement, wherein are provided facilities and opportunities, that is, conditions for the growth of their inhabitants, which conditions are seized upon as soon as the torpid minds centered there became sufficiently aroused under the stimulating, supporting light brought to bear upon them by unselfish ministers of helpful goodness, to become aware of their true position and the degradation of a human soul which it implies. Illustrative instance of the reformation of a spirit. Sometime sincere years ago, as mortals measure time here an individual came to the spirit world who presented a most deplorable and pitiable condition. He had been one of those unfortunates who are reared in iniquity, it would seem almost as though the doctrine of total depravity was demonstrated in his case. His soul was stained with crime in its various degrees, and at length his earthly career terminated upon the gallows, in expiation of the life of a little innocent child he had ruthlessly destroyed. It would be impossible for me to describe to you the tortures of misery through which this spirit has passed. Such suffering I can only faintly conceive of, it must undoubtedly be experienced to be understood. But this I am assured of, the torments of a lake of literal fire and brimstone would be pleasant compared to this. At first he seemed plunged in an abyss of apathy, of squalid and stupid helplessness, from which he would occasionally arouse only to curse humanity, and send out a revengeful, diabolical influence which, from the intensity of its power, as directed by the positive will of this evil-minded man against those who had accused him of wrongdoing and condemned him to his present condition, sped like a ball of flame-bearing destruction in its heart to the peace of mind, happiness, and prosperity of more than one who had testified against him. It became the mission of Beulah to operate upon the mind of this terrible creature, and she set about the task without flinching. For a long time he seemed impervious to her ministrations, insensible of her presence and influence, but she did not falter nor grow weary with her work. Finally the magnetism of her presence began to be felt, and to arouse him from his terrible condition, he began to perceive dimly that a bright and beautiful being was beside him. This tended to frighten him, and he struggled to get away, but all in vain. He tried to utter an oath, but found himself powerless to do so. There was an influence upon him which he could not understand. A light seemed to stream in upon him from which he vainly tried to hide. An illuminating light which radiated from Beulah, and which all pure, exalted spirits bear, had at last begun to penetrate the darkness of this man's soul. All searching in power, it seemed to lay bare every recess of his being, and he recoiled from the exposure. He could not hide himself in darkness, for all gloom had perished, nothing remained but that, to him, terrible light which revealed to him his past life in all its deformity. This was punishment of the direst kind, and he writhed in torment. In the clear light of Beulah's magnetism he beheld the sweet face of the little one he had bodily destroyed gazing upon him with pitying, gentle eyes. The sight overpowered him, he sought to shut it out, but he could not do so, still it haunted him, and he could not escape it until it was withdrawn to give place to another, a one loving, earnest, kindly brooding over him like the face of an angel mother, a only, alas, this poor soul had no angel mother to guide it. The being who had given him mortal birth still dwelt on earth a degraded, besotted, helpless creature. The face he now beheld was the face of Beulah. The sweet, benign expression of this face calmed and comforted the man. He stretched out his hands to it in supplication, and from that moment the evil in his nature was broken and subdued, for, dawning upon his soul came a fainter realization of that life where holy ones, such as this beautiful being, reside, and with it a desire, not a hope, not a belief, but only a wish to be good, entered his soul and pierced it through and through. The experience through which this man passed, which I have briefly and hastily sketched to you, was one bitter and keen in intensity, one not of moments but of years, and all this time Beulah had labored, hoped and watched for the dawn of reason in his mind, which came with the abandonment of evil thoughts and purposes, and the adoption of that condition of mind which recognized the supremacy of goodness, and desired to learn and know something of it. The work carried to completion. But the work had now only commenced. For if it was difficult before to cope with and overpower a mind reeking with evil thoughts and impure desires, how distressing was it now to witness the struggles almost hopeless as they were of this spirit to get away from the remembrance of his past career. How sad to behold him putting forth feeble efforts toward feeling kindly concerning others, and to see him fall back despairingly, with the thought that he could never associate with such as he. How touching to witness his endeavors to cherish only pure desires and to banish evil from his mind, even while the memory of past days haunted him with horror. And yet, every thought, desire, aspiration, and effort for good which he made brought with it such a power to encourage and uphold his spirit that it became impossible for him to sink back into his former condition of degradation and iniquity, and as time rolled on, his struggles with self gradually grew fewer and easier, until at length right triumphed and wrong was overcome. Through all this time, Beulah encouraged and supported him by her presence, her magnetic power and her words of cheer, and, as experience after experience came to him, his conditions brightened. He was led out of the gloom, out of the forests of unpleasant and inharmonious surroundings, until at length no longer sandy wastes and rocky places were his home, but fertile fields and blooming forests offered shelter and refreshment to his spirit. And at last, when her work with him was finished, and she beheld him a soul redeemed from sin through suffering, developed from ignorance by experience, made even peaceful through his power and desire to assist others, Beulah brought to him the sweet spirit, now grown a beautiful woman, whom he had sent untimely into the spirit world, to be his teacher, helper, and guide. He could bear to look upon the sweet face now, could humbly listen to the teachings of one so pure and good, all wretchedness and misery which it was possible for him to experience had been past, and therefore he was prepared to accept the ministrations of this beautiful being in lieu of those of Beulah, whose duty called her elsewhere. And thus, harmony of life was restored to the broken soul, the presence of the one he had injured only served to make him more humble in spirit, self-sacrificing and benign, charitable, pitiful, and tender to the erring and degraded wherever they were to be found. Beulah departed to her celestial home, where a glad, fond welcome awaited her, but the soul she had blessed remained in his own spirit home, not to grow idle or neglectful of others, but to do unto those in need as he had been done by, to impart strength, courage, and knowledge to his fellows while still continuing to advance in spiritual attainments himself. You may wonder what connection the spirit brought to this man by Beulah had with his work. The child maiden was not with him all the time. Other good spirits were associated with him in his home and his work, but whenever she felt that she could be of use to him, this sweet spirit would come and lead him to whatever place she felt there was a lesson awaiting his spirit. Sometimes it would be to spots on earth where spirit help was required by suffering mortals, sometimes to haunts in spirit life where a higher influence was required by struggling souls, and sometimes to the homes of little children in the Summerland, whose happy, peaceful lives afforded a valuable lesson to the observing spirit. From all these experiences he of whom I write gathered power, strength, and light to go on with his work. The reformed spirit returns to earth to reform others. One instance of the good work accomplished by this same arisen, reformed spirit I must relate to you. It was after he had become strong in his manhood and powerful to resist and conquer evil. He had for some time felt a desire to revisit the lower haunts of spirit life, where he had once lived, feeling that perhaps he might be able to help some unfortunate one as he had been aided during the past. Yielding to the impulse, he found himself plunged in darkness, but only for a moment, for the light proceeding from his own person penetrated the gloom, and enabled him to behold his surroundings clearly. I cannot dwell upon his experiences here, but must hasten on to tell you that the first spirit he encountered who was immersed in the darkness which a besotted, sensual life on earth surrounds one with was his own mother, and the being who had given him a mortal birth. Here was work for our spirit, indeed, and he set about it right royally, never faltering, never growing disgusted or disheartened. I cannot tell you of the almost infinite amount of care, patience, endeavor, and affection our redeemed one exhausted on that selfish, stupid, and ignorant mother before he was rewarded by one answering gleam of love and the sight of one faint desire in her soul to be like him. But at length he succeeded in his work, from which he paused not until the redeeming power was fully and freely making its way through the soul of that woman, and slowly but surely lifting her up to the level of the pure and good, a sight over which angels and seraphs might weep with joy, that of a once hardened criminal, though now a redeemed and honest man, laboring unselfishly, earnestly, and constantly to elevate a wretched, degraded, and dishonest woman his own mother out of the bonds of darkness, the haunts of sin, a work that was finally accomplished, and which brought gratitude, joy, and honor to many hearts. This is no fancy sketch I have penned for you, but a recital of what has actually occurred, as related to me by an interested witness of the entire work from its beginning to its completion. First sensations upon entering spirit life. A.O. life. Hope. Immortality. How these words thrill the spirit when it awakens from its dream of mortal existence, and finds itself a conscious, active, arisen being in the natural, tangible world of souls. I have seen many newcomers to the spirit land, and have watched with interest the various expressions of emotion sweep across their speaking faces when they discovered themselves to be not dead but alive, and surrounded by scenes as natural as were any they ever beheld on earth. Some countenances sparkle with joy at the grand revealments of immortal life, others exhibit signs of amazement or disappointment, but all ultimately learn to wear a contented, satisfied expression, as though which is true, they had arrived at home. What is more beautiful to the tired, sorrowing, pain-worn spirit than the sight of a peaceful, happy, comfortable home waiting to give him welcome? And over here in the Summerland are real, true homes where love is to be found, where peace abides, and where a bright measure of contentment is held out to the weary and sad. I have seen something of the stopping places of crude-minded, undeveloped spirits. I have witnessed their surroundings and unpleasant conditions. I have also visited the homes of the pure and good denizens of the spheres, have beheld the beautiful emanations from their lives, have noted their work and perceived the noble, uplifting influence they have sent forth, and I unhesitatingly declare that the good far outnumber the evil and impure, that thousands of spirits are seeking to comfort, soothe and bless others where tens endeavor to injure and debase their fellows. Thousands of spirits make the homes of the eternal world beautiful and sweet. Love seems to be unconfined and free in its expression over there. Flowing forth spontaneously from the heart, it reaches all kindred souls, and enriches the lives of the giver and recipient alike. How often I have seen a spirit doing something that will please and gratify another. How frequently I have heard the remark, "I will do this because my friend will like it." Thoughtful for the comfort and pleasure of others, good spirits have no opportunity, time, or desire for selfish purposes.